welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Doug Fairbairn, a well-known Silicon Valley veteran who currently heads business development for Megachips, a $1 billion Japanese ASIC company, which is launching into the U.S. After graduating from Stanford with an MSCE, Doug spent 8 years at Xerox PARC, which was a big technology hub here in Silicon Valley. He then helped establish the ASIC business as co-founder of VLSI Technology and later Redwood Design Automation, where he served as CEO until it was acquired by Cadence. Doug is now leveraging his ASIC and startup experience by helping establish Megachips as a leader in ASIC design in the U.S. with a special expertise in edge AI technology. Welcome to the podcast, Doug.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, Doug, this is kind of a follow-on discussion we had. We met at a conference last month. But first, tell me what originally brought you to semiconductors.
Yeah, so I actually did a little bit of study in semiconductors when I was at Stanford, but my major focus was on system design, computer design. And as a result of that, I got a position at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, working on some early system development jobs. And sort of midway through my tenure there, we decided that it would be exciting to learn how to design this new world, get into the new world of chip design. And so we invited Carver Mead, who was already well known for teaching a course at Caltech in Introduction to VLSI Design. And he came up to Xerox PARC and gave a 3-day course in how to design chips. And we used that as a launching point. I was working with Lynn Conway at the time, and Carver teamed up with Lynn to write the book, Introduction to VLSI Design, the famous Mead-Conway design methodology. And so I was a student of that, involved in the development of that, and became a teacher of that to not only within Xerox, but within Hewlett-Packard and other places. And as a result of that activity, got hooked up with the other three founders of VLSI Technology, who were in the process of starting perhaps one of the first dedicated foundry semiconductor companies. This is back in 1979. And they realized that their efforts would be more fruitful if there were more people designing chips. So I joined the team and we raised a bunch of money and went off to develop the world of ASIC, which only garnered its name 2 or 3 years after we started the company.
That's a great history. VLSI Design, my goodness. We did a history of them in our first book, the Fabless book I did with Paul McClellan. He worked with you at VLSI, right?
Actually, he did. Paul was, we hired him right out of his PhD program, and he helped develop the design tools for which VLSI Technology was quite famous as a real pioneer in that area.
Yeah, they were. And then I worked for Avante, who bought, you know, Compass Design. Actually, Paul was there when we bought him.
So, that's right.
you know, became part of Avante. So it's a small world. But, so yeah. you described Megachips as, to me, as the billion-dollar company that nobody's ever heard of. I had actually heard of them, but I did not know the whole story. But so tell us a little bit about Megachips and their history, you know, in Japan and coming to the U.S.
Sure. Well, it's an unusual story in the sense that Megachips is a true entrepreneurial startup company. The founder, Masahiro Shindo, started the company, bootstrapped it starting in 1990. He had a background from working at Ricoh and developing their fab and so forth. And he realized that there was this need for an ASIC company there in Japan, and bootstrapped the company starting then, and did a couple of other acquisitions along the way, to the point now, 32 years later, where it's a very successful, profitable company, but really only known in the Japanese marketplace. It's very been very under the radar in the U.S. Actually, you know, when I say entrepreneurial startup, I mean, you know, he actually gave stock options to people. The company went public in, I think, 1998, and everybody had stock, held stock at that time. And so it was really a classic startup model that you don't normally find in Japan, something quite common in the US, but virtually unknown in Japan. So it's really a company with an interesting background. And because it's been quite successful in Japan, but wants to grow outside those borders, he and I had a long history from working together back at VLSI technology days. And he asked me to spearhead their entry into the US market to help expand their presence and grow the company.
So in regards to the US market, what opportunities do you see that's going to drive this expansion?
Well, actually, it's been interesting to see that the number of ASIC companies, I think, has declined over time, and the options for ASIC development partners is relatively small at this time for US-based companies. There are a couple out of China, and I think there's a reluctance to do business with people in China, especially doing when you're working with very proprietary intellectual property, IP. And so we think there's a great opportunity. There's an opening here in the US market. And the fact that we are a Japanese-based company that is well-known for strong IP protection and working closely with our customers, we think that there's a great opportunity in the US market.
So, you know, you mentioned IP, Doug. So does Megachips have their own IP portfolio? You use commercial IP or a combination thereof? What do you guys do for IP?
Yeah, so we actually do both. We have our own IP. We have quite a catalog of analog to digital IP that is used not only in analog chips, but in interface and other A to D, D to A's and so forth on normal chips. You find little bits of analog on almost all chips. In addition, it has a number of other pieces of IP that it has developed over time in the communication space, as well as others. And most importantly, to the US market, as we enter, we have acquired intellectual property IP from a couple of edge AI vendors that we can talk about in a moment. But we also combine that, the IP, the internal IP, with things that we acquire from the outside. Everybody wants to put a microprocessor on their chip, seems like these days. So we work with both ARM and RISC-V vendors to use those processors, as well as others if required by the customer. So pretty much any ASIC chip is going to be a combination of our own proprietary IP, the customer's IP, and commercial IP that we put together to form a complete system.
Yeah, that's definitely the best solution. So at the conference, we were chatting, and edge AI was your focal point. So is that what you guys are really pushing here in the U.S.?
Well, that's the story we'd lead with. I mean, we're happy to engage with any kind of ASIC chip that the customer has interest in creating. But in terms of proactive entry into the market, it's very important, we believe, to bring added value to the to any customer engagement. And there's a lot of demand, but not a lot of understanding and capability when it comes to development of chips with edge AI capability. So we see a great opportunity in the sense that many customers need help in integrating some AI capability into their chips. And so as a result, we think it's a great opportunity to bring unique added value. And that's really what the key to our business is to be able to partner with our customers and bring real value and not just sort of raw design talent, but actual other kinds of intellectual property as well.
When you say edge AI, what are the applications that are the greatest interest to Megachips right now? And what growth opportunities do you see in that vertical market?
Well, I think the areas that are biggest right now are in the wearables market, in the security market, and there's also some significant opportunities in the industrial space as well. And so those are three that we're pursuing actively in terms of where the volume is today. I think there's a lot of focus on the automotive market, and I think that that is a tremendous opportunity. But it's in many applications, it's going to take some time to actually sort of engage the customer, create the design wins, and go to production. It's just the nature of that marketplace that it's a long time to entry. Once you're in, then it's great, and you have a long production cycle typically, but it's a longer term play. So that's definitely one that we're starting to engage with. But I think the short term opportunities are in wearables, for example, headphones, AirPods. There's some medical applications, patches that you can put on that will monitor body conditions, temperature, and other characteristics that the user or the doctor would like to track in real time. So we think that's a very interesting space. In the industrial area, there's robotics. There's also anomaly detection, detecting when motors or other mechanical equipment are about to fail as opposed to after they fail. So those are the areas that we think have the shortest term, shortest lead time to production.
Right. You know, I agree. You know, I said a while back that AI is going to touch, you know, every chip in the future. And, you know, we're seeing that now, you know, in every application and in every vertical market. So we talked a little bit about your AI partner program at the conference. So tell us more about the AI partner program and what kinds of IP partners are you working with to manufacture AI chips, you know, in large volumes?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. The as we entered the market about 18 months ago, and by the way, the founder, Masahiro Shindo, is still the chairman of the company and is really driving this initiative to move the company into the AI space, and has exactly the same position that you did. He says, look, AI is going to be part of virtually every chip that we do in the future. We need to develop a strong expertise in this space to make sure that we can bring that we can help our customers to the maximum extent. So getting to your actual question, the point is that there's a huge number of IP vendors out there, people who have developed, and it's taken quite a long time. Often these vendors have spent, you know, 2, 3, 4 years developing edge AI capability in the form of neural network accelerators or special purpose processors. And so there's been a significant investment in that space, and we weren't in a position to try to duplicate that, but rather partner with these companies. So our goal has been to develop the applications expertise and to partner with certain IP vendors who we thought brought some unique and significant value to the ASIC marketplace. The two that we have partnered with are BrainChip and Quadric. And we chose them for a combination of reasons, and really in the end, the same. Number one, they both had credible capability. They had the technical expertise and the performance demonstrated, or were able to demonstrate performance that was right at the leading edge of the marketplace. Secondly, they had some real traction in the marketplace. They had been out talking to customers for a year or two already, had significant customer engagements, and these customers were starting to get to the point of actually wanting to do actual designs with these products. And third is that both companies had the appropriate proof of capability in silicon and the software support environment to make it possible to successfully integrate these, evaluate and integrate these chips or this IP onto ASIC chips. So that was a combination of reasons. We chose two because we think they were largely complementary. BrainChip is a very unique capability, has on-device learning, can pair up very easily with existing processors to accelerate neural network processing, can handle a wide variety of networks, and is also extremely low power. And so those were very strong characteristics that we had in mind. In the case of Quadric, their strategy was a little bit different and complementary to the BrainChip product. Their strategy was to not so much optimize the neural network processing, but look at the whole processing pipeline from sensor, typically a visual sensor, to a final output. And so they have a flexible processor array that can not only accelerate the neural network processing, but also any DSP filtering or other things you want to do early on in the at the front end of the pipeline, as well as any of the final processing to be done at the end. So we think that capability will shine in more challenging opportunities where there's higher performance required. And so as a result, we think that these products are quite complementary. And in fact, we've discovered that that's the way the customers perceive it as well. So we are taking both to the marketplace in a cooperative fashion with these two companies. We work with their salespeople, we work with their marketing people to identify opportunities and jointly promote these products along with our silicon design capability.
Yeah, I agree completely. Both BrainChip and Quadric have been on our podcast. That's a good partnership for sure. So can you tell us how you engage with customers? Well, you know, what is your business model? What is the most popular engagement model you guys use?
Yeah, so as I say, we're willing to engage with customers at pretty much any level, but where we can bring the most added value and bring the most relationship is where the customer understands clearly where they want to go, but are not absolutely clear on how best to get there. So we like to partner with companies who are engaged in a significant design that's going to have some significant volume, and we can help them choose the right building blocks, both AI related as well as processors, analog, whatever else needs to go into the chip. We can help them choose the optimum process node to implement this chip on. You know, there's so much focus on, you know, the 5 nanometer and the 3 nanometer. The reality is that there's only a very limited number of applications and companies and products that demand that kind of performance and can afford that kind of cost. You know, the cost goes exponentially up as you go into those smaller geometries. So, for example, a 22 nanometer design is going to cost you far less just from an NRE point of view than a 16 nanometer design. And that's going to cost way, way less, millions of dollars less than a 7 or 10 nanometer design. So there's it's very important that the customer doesn't get sucked into focusing on the latest process node, but rather figure out what is the minimum required to meet their requirements. And we're happy to help them on that selection process as well. So we can work with them across the board. We can bring a lot of value in terms of our back-end design skills with their front-end capability. We can help them pick the right building blocks, both in the AI space as well as other areas. And then when it comes to production, we have done over 1,500 ASICs in our time over the last 30 years. And so we are extremely well versed in the process of taking things to production, doing the qualification, doing the wafer testing, variety of packaging alternatives, making sure that we ship high quality products at a very competitive price.
Yeah, you know, that brings the other point up is foundry strategies. You know, do you have a multi-foundry strategy, or are you locked into a specific foundry? How do you work with foundries?
Yeah, so we actually have relationships with 4 foundries. The 2 primary ones are TSMC and GlobalFoundries. However, we also work with UMC and Samsung. Had some initial conversations with Intel, but I think they're a little bit down the road before they're ready for this kind of business. But yeah, we think multi-foundry strategy is important. We have, you know, just in the time that we've been launching the AI space, we've found customers interested in 2 or 3 different foundries. So the ability to deal with and have relationships with more than one is actually quite important.
Yeah, I agree. Multi-foundry strategy is good. Competition is good. And, you know, different applications suit different foundries. There's no doubt about that.
Yep, absolutely.
So, Doug, do you have any final thoughts?
I just think this is a very exciting space, and I think that there's a huge opportunity because so many customers want to do something in this space, but it's just not very clear exactly what the right choices are and how you proceed and what the right design methodology is. And so I'm excited about being able to work with those customers and bring that expertise to them and be mutually successful in the process.
Yeah, I think the ASIC business is incredible. You know, it was a big part of how we became fabless, you know, during the transformation that we all made. And, you know, you and I were there. And
yeah, absolutely.
We have seen a resurgence in the ASIC business. And, you know, there has been a lot of consolidation, of course. But, you know, with the systems companies coming out and doing their own, wanting to do their own ASICs and, you know, the different automotive companies, for example, you know, they want to be involved and maybe they want to have more control over their silicon, especially now with the shortages and stuff, what we experienced.
Yeah, they've really learned their lesson, haven't they?
Yeah, I wasn't going to put it that way, but you're right. they definitely see the benefit of having more control. But I think this is a second boom for the ASIC business. So I think your move to the United States is definitely well suited. So to get a hold of Doug, you guys have an office in Campbell, California, on
That's
East
right.
Hamilton Avenue. I can list a dozen companies that were on East Hamilton Avenue over the years. So you can get them at megatips.com and talk
right.
to Doug and engage with them there. So thank
Here's
you, Doug, for your time. Great conversation. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks very much, Dan.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.